Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to Open Sources Guelph here on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. I'm Adam A. Johnson of Guelph Politico, and joining me is...
All the weather out... Oh, sorry. I've just been completely saturated with the songs today, so... It's unavoidable, isn't it? I made a promise that we wouldn't play any, so I don't know why I started off with that. Apologies. Scotty Hertz here on the...
Controls. Turn back the clock. Start again.
And Scotty Hertz here on the controls. Welcome to the show.
All right, that's better. Open Sources is CFRU's political and current affairs discussion show. And you can listen to us here every Thursday at 5 p.m. here on CFRU. You can listen to us anytime online. Go to CFRU.ca and click on the Listen Now icon at the top right-hand corner of your screen. And you can listen to us anytime by downloading the Open Sources podcast on Podbean, iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and Spotify. Today we're going to head out to Alberta, where it's the end of the world as we know it if we don't immediately drop all of those concerns and get our oil to the market. Will this issue absorb all other concerns in the weeks to come? And then a week of more scandals at Queen's Park, including scandals breaking today. But we have a team up of two powerful unions against Ford, Ford family friend, who's now Ontario's top cop. When will it end, Doug? When will it end? Anyway... we will finish with next the passing of George H.W. Bush. Was he a sinner? Was he a saint? Why does he have to be one or the other? But first, the G20, it was quite the comedy of errors there down in Buenos Aires. A lot of stuff going on. A lot of stuff that has carried on from the week. Probably the most talked about is Tariff Man, Donald Trump. Who was supposedly had reached some kind of detente with the Chinese in terms of the trade war, and then on Tuesday went on Twitter and called himself the Tariff Man, which pretty much deflated any and all progress that the markets thought they were enjoying in terms of the detente.
Did they not tank almost outright by like
700 points on Tuesday?
3%.
The U.S. market was closed yesterday because of the George H.W. Bush funeral. But when I last heard about the market, they were down 300 points. So it's lost all the gains it made this year.
Great job, Tariff Man.
Yeah. You did it again, Tariff Man.
Yeah, he needs some theme music, or maybe not. But
that's exactly what he wants.
I saw one comment. I'm not even sure it was. It was an in passing thing. It was like, you know, we really have to keep Donald off of Twitter because he gets on there and it just starts to. They did. They were attempting to do at the G20. Here are the two top economies in the world. Mm-hmm. To come up with some kind of truce in their trade war, and yet it would seem as if on the first day that they did, and then after a night of tweeting and Big Macs or whatever he eats, he kind of blew it. But of course, he never backtracks and I think never, pulls back on stuff.
No,
he almost seemed like he wasn't in the right place somehow. The famous who did he went. Had an onstage thing with the president of Buenos Aires, of Argentina, I mean, in Buenos Aires. And then he just kind of walked away.
Yeah, get me out of here.
Yeah.
So it was supposed to be set up for the family photo. You know, everyone was supposed to come in, shake hands with the Argentina president, and hang out and get that family photo done. But Trump's like, yeah, hi, get me out of here.
Trump doesn't enough. Like those things unless he's just the guy as well. We'll talk about it later at the Bush funeral as well. If it's not just his, if it's not just the Trump show, then he's not too happy. Yeah, and I guess we'll get to Ben Salman in a minute, but the talk of trying to make friends with China, and it sounds like. Sarah Huckabee Sanders had made some, like, you know, counterpoints or something that just weren't even on message. She was, I think the Argentina delegation said, no, she's saying that, but that's not actually what happened. So they're like, rather than everybody, you know, singing kumbaya and holding hands about the global finance and the economies, it was more like, you know, people openly contradicting each other. And it's weird how it tends to boil down to things like Trump walking away, and of course funky handshake between Bin Salman and Putin, which, you know, they're not as to whether it was rehearsed or not.
The bro thing, yeah.
There was one scene with Bin Salman standing waiting for the family photos we were talking about. He's just kind of off on his own and everybody's ignoring him, including Putin, who was beside him. And then there's this big demonstration of, yeah, man, we're so cool.
Yeah. We're stone cold killers, bro.
We're stoked for this. Yeah. Hey, bro. How's it? Exactly. So that stuff doesn't really mean anything in the scheme of things. But of course, you know, it's almost like a, what's the name for a visual soundbite? It's what it's like. We need to come up with this and patent it because
a clip.
Well, it's a clip, but there's more to it than that. There's more. There's a lot going on in those 10 seconds where it's like, it is a clip. Roll the clip. But we can't do that. We have to use our imaginations with this show. But yes, and there was, of course, there was the reluctant signing of the new the NAFTA replacement, whatever the heck it's called, USMCA or whatever. It was a weird kind of thing. Trudeau was, well, you could tell by the look on his face, he was sort of reluctant. It looked like Trump signed his name across all of the lines, and there was this discussion as to where do we sign.
That was a beauty.
Just initial here. And then there was the, when they presented standing at the three podiums, and they all had the United States logo on it. It was really weird. Like, didn't anybody think that might be a bit problematic? It's not even in the U.S., this conference.
There was so much problematic there. Yeah. There was the signing of it.
Who's the floor runner there?
Which,
like, you got it wrong.
Which Trump asked, at some point Trump asked, which one of these is the important one? And Trudeau, like, perfect deadpan, says, we all get a copy.
And he called him Donald, and I guess Donald doesn't like that too much.
He hates that.
Yeah.
He freaking hates it.
Well, Donald.
And then there was the thing where Trump usually does when he signs something, where he holds it up and shows everyone that he knows how to write his name. And then for some reason, Peña Nieto thought he had to do it too.
Oh, yeah. And Trudeau didn't, and that's like, you didn't do it.
Trudeau was like poker face. Like,
yeah, he's not happy.
Was a thing of beauty that he held. Like, there was where Trump was like signing on the wrong line, and in one of the, it was shared a lot on Twitter, but it shows like everybody's reaction watching Trump sign the wrong line.
Yeah, focusing it on people going.
And Chrystia Freeland was like on the verge of breaking
down. She couldn't
hold
it.
And she's due because, you know, was practically sleeping at the State Department for like a month. But
yeah, and then Trump said, well, we don't like that woman too much. You know the one, couldn't remember her name, obviously. You know that negotiator woman, we don't like
She's
her.
A woman in politics. Why should Trump care about her unless her name's Ivanka? Anyway, so it was a comedy of errors all over. Not the least of which that, you know, Trump ends the weekend being the lone man out who won't sign for like climate change.
Yes, because they all moved on. A lot of them moved on to Poland for that conference as well.
Yeah,
right?
The CUP conference.
The CUP conference, and it was more of the same from Trump. I guess Trump had to come back for the funeral.
But as I said, we're going to talk about it. I don't want to leave China because one of the things that the meeting highlighted is China's growing influence in South America. As China has a growing influence in Africa and the Middle East, as America's sort of withdrawing from the world, China's filling the void. Mm-hmm. China is the second largest lender to Argentina after the IMF. They are building projects down there. There's a nuclear power plant project down there that China is funding. So, you know, the undercurrent of all of this is that while Trump talks about, I'm tariff man, President for Life Xi is making these incredible inroads in places as Trump's honking off half the world and, you know, leaving the Argentina president alone on stage saying, get me out of here. I have to get wherever I'm going. President Xi is filling any.
He's playing it so cool.
He's playing it super cool that it's hard. People are hardly noticing because of the three car pileup in the United States.
Yeah,
it's something that, you know, looking back on, we're going to be smacking ourselves in the head, going like, why? How didn't we see this coming? How did China become like the preeminent superpower of the world? And it's because they're making these moves,
and they're doing
people aren't looking.
Yeah, exactly. They're doing it. Well, I mean, not completely on the quiet. If you're at the G20 and I noticed on the list of invited guests, so there's the G20, mm-hmm. which includes a bunch of countries, and the EU, which covers other, you know, that's sort of their special relationship, I guess. Mm-hmm. They count as one of the 20. But then the some of the guests, like Jamaica was representing the West Indies, as it's called, the Caribbean, but Rwanda, Senegal, I'm pretty sure that China have interests there as well. You mm-hmm. mentioned Africa. So mm-hmm. Africa, South America, I mean, the American sphere or attempted influence for so long was like overthrowing or trying to overthrow people. But China's like, well, if you let us come in and do this and we want your resources or whatever, and we'll build you some roads and we'll put a school in there and it's all good.
Yeah.
Who's going to say no to that?
Yeah.
Really, who is going to say no to that rather than, we're going to send the troops? I mean, and who knows if, I don't think China has troops in these arrangements. There's no security. I mean, there probably is a security thing somewhere.
There's security, yeah.
But well, it's not like an
invasion.
For Chinese
nationals, I'm sure there's security, but I doubt there's like Chinese troops in uniforms and stuff.
There may be around the nuclear plant you're talking about. And I was actually surprised to hear that. But at the same time, it's like if they're willing to provide that infrastructure, and I guess it gives them, China, a place to kind of dump money as well, right? We've got all these little... I thought I saw something about a shipyard somewhere too, or a listening station in Argentina. But I think they said, well, it's just for our, you know, it's a weather station, wink. I don't know all the details on that, but it was.
It's a weather station plus.
It sounds like they actually ceded some property and said, okay, this is now China. Mm-hmm. Or Chinese owned or Chinese interest, and you can set up whatever you like.
Yeah, so, it's China now.
It's China now. But we're pals, so it's good. There's all definitely a lot of that going on. And yet you see this, I guess it's a little bit of animosity between China and the U.S. They're trying. I guess Xi is trying, but...
China doesn't have... like, it's not like the United States doesn't have a right to be mad at China and the way China conducts business, particularly in the realm of international or intellectual property.
Yeah.
Which I know is a big sticking point, but Donald Trump is woefully outmanned in both diplomatic prowess, negotiating prowess, knowledge of international affairs. He's just outmatched.
Yeah.
And that's a shame because, as you know, what it proves is that China's becoming a bigger and bigger influencer in the world. Mm-hmm. And again, not to put too fine a point out, they're doing it mostly without anyone noticing, or at least not without
except
like sort
for
of the
open sources team. No, but you know, well, yeah.
I mean, without like the people who know China and know what it's doing. No, but I mean, it's not, you know, top of mind on the nightly news, let's say.
No, because it's there's not all the gaffes, let's call them. And just to mention Russia briefly too, I believe that Trump was supposed to have some kind of meeting with Putin, but mm-hmm. it was canceled. And Trump said it was because of what was going on in the Crimea
Ukraine
with
sailors.
The Ukrainian ships. Yeah. But it also, that was like the minute that the Cohen plea dropped, right? So if Trump seemed distracted, he really, really is because, you know, that, I was going to use the noose is tightening a little bit, but, you know, let's just say that the dogs are nipping at the heels. At this
Mueller's
point,
painting, right? Painting him into a corner.
Yeah. So that's coming down the pipe as well. I think a lot of people are.
I've
seen some joking about an early Christmas gift. I don't think it's going to be. It probably won't be until the Congress sits properly.
Right.
That's coming down as well.
Well,
it's going to keep us very busy, I think.
Yeah. He's going out to get onto Marine One to go to Joint Base Andrews to leave for Argentina. And he's like, no, the meeting with Putin's going down. It's happening. I'm going to meet with Putin. It's going to be great. And then mid-flight, he cancels.
Yeah, that's right.
Because of the Ukraine thing that happened like the Sunday before. Before we leave this, I want to mention the Trudeau quote-unquote faux pas about gender disparity in work camps.
Oh, he said something, or he signed away some rights, didn't he? Or like,
no, no.
He
made comments saying that there are impacts when you bring construction workers into a rural area, social impacts because of the mostly male construction workers. And what he means is, construction crews still mostly male, still a lot of toxic masculinity in these areas, and that there needs to be work done. And a lot of people in Alberta, and this provides a nice segue. A lot of people thought in Alberta thought he was talking about like the work camps of people who work on the oil patch and took offense. And a lot of tweets about my husband works in the oil patch for 20 years and he would never treat a woman the wrong way. And it's like, well, that's nice for your husband. It's nice that he doesn't, you know, sexually harass or rape women. But there is research that says, yeah, actually, in a lot of these work camps, the rates of sexual assaults go up, the rates of prostitution go up, the rates of sexually transmitted infections go up. So, I mean, maybe we could listen to the Prime Minister before we start choking him out, thinking that he's talking about our loved ones. Maybe.
Yeah. I mean, it'll be one of those things that gets whipped up on social media and then everybody takes it personally, right?
But yeah.
He's not incorrect.
No.
But
Speaking of Alberta oil,
it's cheap. Get some
it's
now.
Cheap. Forget those two lattes you're going to get this week and buy a barrel of oil.
Yeah.
Actually, the oil has been going up. It went up to $20 earlier this week because Premier Rachel Notley of Alberta announced that they were going to cut production of oil because the oil is so cheap. They have a backlog of oil. They aren't able to get the oil to market and to refineries. So the price of oil tanked, pun intended. My question is, we saw the immediate effect of cutting production. I understand that, you know, jobs and all that, but wasn't that always like the first immediate solution? Like, there's too much oil. We're selling it for too cheap. Maybe we'll stop making so much, stop pulling so much of it out of the ground for a while until, you know, we can clear the backlog. That seems like simple to me. I don't know.
Well, I mean, they're all still making money. Regardless of the optics or whatever they say about this, it's not as if that the companies are broke now. They're just not making enough. So how much is enough? Plus, we don't really have a, you know, national oil like we did in the 70s and 80s, which still is a sore point out that way. You know, the National Energy Program it comes up over and over again as if Justin Trudeau is personally responsible because of his genetics, right? So, yes, there is a glut, and they're saying it's because they can't move it. I think there's this sort of false equation going on about, well, we can't move this, so we really should get a pipeline. The amount of pipeline ads, particularly on CBC, from the government of Alberta have been cranked up to the max. It's like it's this nice little – you may have seen it if you still watch the news old school like I do most nights. This little cartoony ad about the we really need this pipeline, and there's flowers and bees and stuff. Things that are nowhere near any oil patch project anywhere except on, you know, the screensavers of people's computers or something. But I've also heard in more than one – story about line 3. Enbridge have got a line that's coming online that isn't the ones that are being fought, Trans Mountain and that. There's a line coming on that's Hardisty, isn't that where everything? I want to see this Hardisty place, like a picture of it, because it just sounds like a big puddle of oil. It's always like all the pipelines go from that place into North Dakota somewhere. And I think one of the numbers that I saw, I think it said it was that this pipeline was going to shift something like, you know, they're saying the cutbacks was 325,000 barrels. This pipeline may handle up to 400,000 barrels, which just happens to equal the number that they've cut. So I don't think it's all bad news. This might just be a temporary thing. Well, it's going to be a temporary thing for sure. And I also don't believe that the cutbacks affects all the grades of oil. There's different grades, right? So there's lots of, let's call it, dirty oil in Alberta, and that it's not the kind you just put the straw in the ground. It's like, I'll take your milkshake and then I'll take and just it goes to a refinery. A lot of it needs treatment. Tar sands stuff definitely needs way more treatment to get a barrel of oil out of it, and it's an expensive proposition to do it, right?
First of all, thank you for the There Will Be Blood reference.
You need somebody for end credits? I think I could probably pull it out of
me. Yeah. I
drink your milkshake. But it's true, though. Some of that oil is taken out of the ground, refine it, and done. But not the case with all of
that's the
oil.
I mean, right? There's a lot of fuzzy math around this. We're having that $80 million. We're losing $80 million a day, guys, which a lot of sources have pointed out is kind of bollocks. It comes from a Scotiabank report that has been criticized for being riddled with errors.
That number changes, right? Is it 40 million?
Right.
Is it 80 million?
Well, this is the thing. It was 40 million.
Yeah. And then all of a sudden it got doubled.
The report talks about how it's not building the pipelines costs $15 billion a year, which comes to $40 million a day or $15 billion a year, $40 million a day, and then somehow, somewhere at some point, Rachel Notley doubled the number. People have been impressed, have been asking, like, where do you get that number? She refers back to this Scotiabank report that is riddled with holes.
Yeah.
And on top of that, you make a point that they keep talking about this discount that is basically for quality, yes. But also because of transportation, because the refineries are in Texas, and of course there's also oil in Texas. So, taking oil from Texas to refine it in Texas is cheaper than taking oil from Alberta and sending it to Texas to refine it. The discount is a very small percentage of the oil, so it isn't applied to all barrels equally. So
people just think of a barrel of oil as being this, but it's just oil, but it's not at all.
No.
It's like maple syrup. There's like four different grades, right?
Right.
I want a barrel of maple syrup. I'm just going to drink it until March. But anyway.
But yeah, exactly. It's just you have to be really deep in the weeds to understand some of these numbers. I barely understand them myself, but the thing you need to realize is the number that the $80 billion comes from is double what the number is from a report that is super sketchy. Remember, like Scotiabank and a lot of these banks also have money invested in pipelines.
Oh yeah.
So it's in. They're talking about what's in their best interest too, and what's in the best interest of their bottom line. And that this discount they're talking about is not applied. In fact, actually applied to a small number of barrels of oil. No one is talking about what I think the key problem is, that Alberta can't manage its money from the oil patch, that it doesn't charge as much as they should, that when the boom times are on, they don't manage the money. It all comes in and goes right back out the door. Mm-hmm. Nobody's talking about how I forgot my other point. those are the two main points there, that there is a fiscal management story here in Alberta, and it's not Rachel Notley's fault. Like, Rachel Notley is flailing about trying to do something so that she has a hope in hell of winning the election next year.
I heard one line. She's gone full Churchill. She's like, we must defend the province and defend our resources.
Right.
It's the defense of Alberta stance, but it's, you know, there is a glut, right? It's not. I don't think it's totally a left or a right issue. It wouldn't matter who the premier was. It's like it's a capitalist one. It's like there's supply, there's demand,
right?
There's too much supply. Yes. If you go back in time, there's footage making the rounds of when Preston Manning's dad, Ernest Manning, was premier of Alberta, talking very specifically as to why they had to cut back production because, you know, there was a glut. You know, it doesn't matter who's in the chair. It's like that is if you have this capitalist system, this is how it works, right? And it will come down to excuses too. Well, we don't have the pipeline. Well, we don't have enough oil cars, to move oil. Excuses, right? It's like if there's a glut of stuff that nobody wants, you know, you wanted a free market. I don't know what they're trying.
But it's not a free market. That's the other point. The oil and gas industry is heavily subsidized in this country.
Absolutely.
So, if it was a truly free market, they might really be in trouble because they don't have government money to subsidize
this. No, it's this mythical.
And then they'd really be stuck because I think the government's doing everything they can, but we have a first minister's conference this week. It started today. I think it's in Quebec City.
Now, is Ford boycotting it? I know we're going to talk about him soon, but
I don't know if he's
like he said he wasn't going to go or he's not going to sign anything.
I think Katie Simpson of the CBC reported that she's hearing that there may be a walkout. That some
a very staged, and everybody will clap as he walks out, right? So.
Oh, yeah, that. Yeah. But it would be like Ford and Moe and Pallister.
The Hank Hill guy, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Sorry, Mo.
But it'd be like the
never
usual.
Never heard of you until that.
It would be
photo.
Like the usual suspects. Like we don't want to deal with you, Justin Trudeau. We know who. Yeah, Trudeau,
staged.
Whose father said on his deathbed, "Bankrupt Alberta, Justin.
That's
if
right.
you do one thing, bankrupt Alberta.
Turn the screws, son.
Yeah. Never forget Lockheed. I mean,
keep Petro-Canada, yeah.
Keep Petro-Canada Crown Corporation.
It's funny how Pierre Trudeau had this, not his accent when he was dying. But anyway, yeah. son,
but
to tell you.
It's, what I see happening here is, it's the headless chicken syndrome. It's like we're going to, the head's been cut off and we're all flailing about watching this thing run around with no direction, no course, no idea that its head is gone. And we just have to wait for it to sort of drop. And it's just, I understand there are people's livelihoods at stake.
Sure.
That, you know, people are suffering that, you know, got to pay the rent. I get it. But there's a piece of this, and I want to make sure we focus on this, that in boom times, in the past, Alberta governments cut taxes, mm-hmm. they cut checks, they don't put any money in the bank, they assume it's going to go on forever, and then when the boom times stop, the rest of the country has to drop absolutely everything to fix the situation for Alberta. I'm not saying they're not justified, but Albertans have to understand that you can't get free checks in the mail without there being a cost later on. And one would think fiscally conservative people would understand that.
Mm-hmm. And if you hear all the chit-chat, let's say, about, you know, transitioning to a green economy and mm-hmm. like, well, the lead-in is usually, and I think this is neoliberal politics as well. It's like, well, we need to do this, but then we'll have the green economy later. We'll do that later. We're going to
or that we can
later.
Do it both at the same time.
We need
time.
To sell this oil yeah. and make some money so we can slap some solar panels up on top of the tar pond. I don't know whatever their plan is, right? But they, you know, lots of lip service. But I don't. There's nothing concrete now. Right now, it's the, you know, the defend oil and defend the province. So I'm not really sympathetic to Rachel Notley. I kind of feel sorry for her, though, because she's in that spot. As you say, when is the election there?
Spring, I think.
Spring. So this mm-hmm. is coming like a truck. Mm-hmm. This is coming like a pipeline full of bitumen down the pipe. So, yeah, it's under. And what's Jason Kenney talking about? Something about gay marriage or I don't know. He doesn't seem to be. Maybe locally there's more. And when I say locally, I mean the province of Alberta. About what Kenny's, the whole province is local, what Kenny's opinion is. But I haven't really heard too much from him. So he's probably just biding his time until, well, of course he was in the photo.
Yeah. The well, I think we have resistance. To, I think it's going to come down to the pocketbook issues. I think Kenny's going to come out with a bunch of promises about getting the oil done. And I mean, it was always going to be an uphill battle for Rachel Notley with the United Conservative Party. It was always going to be, but we'll leave that there. Before we go to break, we're going to take a minute to consider the date, day in history, 29 years ago.
Wow.
Genevieve Bergeron, Helene Colgan, Natalie Corbeau, Barbara Deneau, Anne-Marie Edward, Maud Havernick, Marcy Lagagne, Marcy LeClaire, Anne-Marie LeMay, Sonia Pelletier, Michelle Richard, Annie Saint-Arnaud, Annie Turcotte and Barbara Klusnik-Widjewitz were killed on this day in 1989 by a guy who thought that women shouldn't learn science and technology. And we still see, you know, the effects of that today, just earlier this year in Toronto. And it's important to pause today and remember them and remember all women who are killed violently by men. And that goes for our indigenous friends, the missing and murdered indigenous women and girls as well. And I believe there will be a memorial at Marianne's Park down the road from here on Gordon Street later this evening. So if you feel particularly compelled to take a moment this evening, that would be a good way to show your support. We're going to take a break here, and we're going to come back with more political news. You're listening to Open Sources Guelph here on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio.
That was Ghost Snake. Not a new CD, I'm told, but new into the station at least. The album is called Whispers of the Ghost Snake, and that was called Frankenstein and Merman. Merman? Movie with Merman or
SpongeBob? The closest thing to a Merman is probably the creature from the Black Lagoon.
Ah. I thought there was somebody named Merman on SpongeBob.
Maybe.
Maybe. I don't know. Anyway.
I'm not CD. 5 years old, so I haven't watched SpongeBob.
Okay, I guess we won't pursue that line of discussion any further.
I mean, I know SpongeBob has a lot of older fans.
And I probably wasn't five, but it was, you know, good times, good times. Anyway, Frankenstein Merman, Ghost Snake, check them out. I believe they are a local outfit.
All right, well, we're going to keep it local, talking about what's going on in Ontario here. If you like scandals, this has been a pretty good week for you. Doug Ford's been keeping you busy.
It's a pretty good day.
Yeah, it has been a good day. I'll work backwards. The late breaking one is that the newly named commissioner of the OPP, Ron Taverner, purchased a home in Toronto from a close political advisor to Doug Ford, who, as you know, is the premier. It was a private sale where Mr. Taverner bought a house, a three-bedroom cottage-style home on Church Street in the Weston neighborhood of Toronto, which is not cheap. But he bought it for $550,000.
Which is cheap.
Which is cheap.
I've heard that the no detached homes in Toronto go under $1 million now.
I believe it.
Even a beater.
Yeah.
It's not quite Vancouver, but anyway.
Well, I mean, the ones in Vancouver are going for like $3 and $4 million.
So let's say half-price house.
A half-price house. This person who Taverner brought it from, named Simone Daniels, a political operative who has a decade-long association with Ford and is described in a Ford press release as a longtime advisor. This person worked at Deco Labels and is now the deputy chief of staff in the premier's office. So that's fishy. It was already fishy with Taverner, who is a Ford family friend, was a superintendent in technically, in the Toronto Police Service. Originally, the search for the new OPP commissioner was limited to deputy chief and above. And if you know your police rankings, superintendent is underneath deputy chief.
Yeah, what was the other one? Assistant commissioner. There's like certain, the hierarchy, like anything.
Right.
And that was the minimum requirement.
You had to be the number one or the number two person of another police force.
But they changed those requirements, didn't they?
Quite suddenly.
Yeah, how about that?
Doug Ford claims he had no part of that, although there was a vote in cabinet. In other news, a U.S. Electric regulator put the kibosh on Ontario Hydro buying a utility in Washington State for $6.7 billion. They say it's because Doug Ford has been willing to politically interfere with the operation of Ontario Hydro, which, as you may recall, is a publicly traded company. And if you want to talk about stability, you maybe don't want to have political interference in a publicly traded company. And that was after two Ontario Hydro's credit rating was downgraded, also because of interference. Although Doug says he's not to blame for any of this.
And I think the particular point that they were making was, we haven't said his name in a while, Mayo Schmidt.
Yeah.
We're not even sure whether Mayo Schmidt has an accent. But the firing of the $6 million man was one of the things that kind of red flagged this deal on the U.S. end. Now, there's a lot here, I wouldn't even say to unpack, but first of all, why is Ontario Hydro, or Hydro One, sorry, now Hydro One, I've been around, Ontario Hydro, Hydro One buying a utility company in Washington State? Those people who pay hydro bills know that every time they look at the bill, there's a debt reduction charge on there. We're still paying for, I believe it was for the refurbishment of Pickering. Mm-hmm. At least that's what they said in 1990s something. So, but I guess we're still paying income tax, and that was the temporary measure in 1917. Doesn't matter, but it's like, that to me is the bigger question as to why is Hydro One doing this? And then, of course, you can make political hay of them saying, well, you know, Doug Ford's interfering in this and that, which is true. And the interference, he says, is supposedly in the best interests of the province to, quote, save money. But as we've seen, and that went down, I don't know all the details, in Toronto this week, too, when they said we're going to increase the budgets of the councillors because we have...
Double it.
Yeah, we have such a massive area to deal with now.
Yeah.
And if I have the numbers right, it effectively kind of erases the mythical savings that reducing the size of the council was going to make, or at least put a big divot in it. But also with this deal, the failure of this deal, when these things fail, there's penalties. And I believe the penalty is $103 million.
Cool.
So that's $103 million that just goes off into space because, because we're open for business, except in Washington State, city of Toronto. This the police chief business too, which doesn't exactly involve a lot of bucks, but it still sort of, it smells
funky
in my view of interference in the hiring process. It's just a little too convenient that Taverner didn't really qualify for the original posted job. Then all of a sudden he does and happens to be tight. But no, I wasn't. I was at the meeting, but I didn't. I was probably in camera, of course.
Taverner is a guy who, I don't know the exact details, but, you know, he was sort of hovering around when they're investigating Crackgate, Toronto Police, and they had to sort of cut him out because he is so closely connected with the Ford family.
Yep.
We also have the flip side of this, which is that the OPP is currently investigating shenanigans in Hamilton, Niagara in terms of PC nominations, the 407 scandal, the data leak to the PC party of 407 information, supposedly to help with campaigning. These are investigations being run by the OPP, and now Ford has a friend running the OPP. But, you know,
How about that? We
sort of think about this stuff in terms, like when you think of Matthew Whitaker and the Trump administration, the temporary AG, who went on CNN and talked about how full of crap the Bob Mueller investigation is. We see something very similar in this. You know, Taverner, Ford family friend, now going to be looking after investigations into PC party shenanigans, or PC alleged PC party shenanigans, I should say. But it's sketchy. It's so sketchy. And on top of it all, there was this other story that Robert Benzie broke of the Toronto Star, of the province's chief accountant quit after refusing to sign off on the $15 billion deficit that the PCs, quote-unquote, discovered. She thinks it's about $5 billion too many. And so now we're like...
And this just happened today? Or?
This was yesterday, I believe.
So within...
So, I mean, it's... Oh, no, it was earlier today. But I think there was... It was being sniffed about last night. But it's... The problem here is that, you know, when the Liberals came out last year and said, hey, we balanced the budget and we're going to go back into deficit next year, but we balanced the budget this year, we all thought it was balks. And there was AG report yesterday that says, you know, the new OSAP program is littered with issues, and Metrolinx is being politicized, which means that the, you know, the budgets for like key projects like
or
the Crosstown LRT,
the trains,
that's that's another thing. Actually, Catherine Fife tweeted about that she asked about two-way all day go, and it looks like that's being put on the back burner till at least 2030.
Oh my God, I'm gonna get the seniors pass. I think it's good.
Yeah, tell me about it. But the deficit figure specifically, I think when they announced, oh, the deficit's really $15 billion, of course, in your back of your head, it's like, oh, we just discovered like more debt. Okay. It doesn't hurt politically that the PCs have found that the Liberals actually increased the deficit more than they said. Mm-hmm. And now we have this actual staffer, this person who's part of the nonpartisan political apparatus in the of the legislature of Queen's Park, of the government, saying like, no, that was kind of bollocks, and I didn't sign off on it, so I quit.
And we're also seeing recently, within the past, let's say 2 weeks, the factions, let's say, gearing up for a scrap. You mentioned it off the top how there's been an alliance forged between Unifor and OPSU, right? Smokey Thomas and Jerry Diaz came out and said they're going to coordinate campaigns and advocacy against the government, which is something that they do. Currently, Unifor doesn't belong to the Canadian Labour Congress, but so this is interesting in that you've got one group that belongs to the Labour Congress and one that doesn't. They're joining forces. Plus, we're also seeing all kinds of other activity. And I'm thinking particularly within the Franco-Ontarian community, they're pissed off too. So it's like every week something is falling. They've lost an MPP in that. Who's to say that, you know, I mean, I don't think there's going to be this mass domino effect of people bailing. Although there was a rumor of that as well.
Yeah.
It's like there's certain people gearing up saying, oh, this isn't what we signed up for. So that'll be interesting. But it's I wouldn't even say it's polarization, but, you know, the anti-forces are definitely gearing up for a scrap that we probably haven't seen since the Harris era.
Well, I mean,
Eves era.
I think what's clear is that a lot of people haven't signed up for, as they said, they'd sign up for this. And so what we have here is the Ontario PC Party coming under threat of like becoming this cult of personality, in much the same way the Republican Party south of the border is. And there's an article in Now Toronto this week that talks about that, you know, you have, you know, Ford's agenda, you know, sort of eclipsing all other considerations. And
the agenda that we didn't know about during the election. It just kind of
that he never announced.
No,
and
there's nothing.
There was no detail. You see Andrew Scheer copying the same playbook, and it's...
Yeah, it's Trudeau is bad.
Right.
Everything we do is good.
Right.
Business, business, business.
Yeah.
That's the agenda, in my opinion.
But as we've seen, the point that the Now article was making is that, you know, eventually it started... The wheels started falling off the wagon, and it looks like that's happened like even earlier in the case of Doug Ford. Rob Ford at least had like one good year in terms of political victories, and you can read Mark Toohey's book about that 1 year and how difficult it was to get like even just one good year under the belt. But Doug can't even deliver one good year, and that may be because...
He hasn't delivered a good week yet, really, has he?
Well, I mean, and that may be because of the party politics. There's no party politics at City Hall. Yeah. You know, every councillor is a party unto themselves, you might say. But it's amazing how this has come apart so freaking quickly. It's crazy.
So, of course, the story that we will be following closely for the Ford Thursday again, like it used to be with Rob. It's like, why does this always happen on a Thursday?
Ford's
like,
Day.
Madly cramming before the show. Like, happened?
You should change it to Ford's Day.
Ford's Day.
Yeah.
The permanent Ford's Day topic. Yeah.
We're going to wrap up with George H.W. Bush, the 41st president of the United States, who died at the age of 94 almost a week ago. He was laid to rest today at his presidential library in Texas. And it's been interesting sort of watching the debates and the discussion happen. I think I would say that the occasion of a person's death is not a time to sweep aside, you know, the controversies of their life. It seems like a time to consider a person's whole life, the good, the bad, and the ugly. And I think there was a lot of each for George H.W. Bush. I think it sort of disturbs me that, you know, he presided in a campaign with the Willie Horton ad.
Mm-hmm.
That was so blatantly racist and had a lot of holes in the story that he was telling. The Willie Horton ad, if you don't know, Willie Horton was a criminal who was out on a furlough, a weekend pass in Massachusetts, which was the home state of Governor Dukakis, who was George Bush's rival in the 1988 presidential election. Well, Willie Horton was out on a weekend pass. He murdered a woman in a home invasion. And
not a good guy, by the way.
Not a good guy.
But
the ad made it sound like Michael Dukakis was going to let scary black men come and kill you. And we certainly saw a piece of that because a lot of in the recent 2018 election, because Donald Trump's campaign released a Willie Horton ad of its own. To a degree, it was the codification of racism in the American political system. On the good side, George H.W. Bush worked with Brian Mulroney to help stop acid rain and the hole in the ozone layer, which was impressive. And I don't think there's been an equally – actually, I know for a fact there hasn't been an equally big environmental accomplishment done by a conservative leader in North America since.
No, because they've all given up on it, right?
Yeah.
It's like it doesn't matter anymore. We're just totally – we answer to business. And that's the difference. And not to say that Bush Sr. didn't answer to business because, he was an oil tycoon.
He
made his cash.
Yeah.
And aligning with the friends from Skull and Bones, like Monty Burns and Laddie the Dog. But we haven't had a Simpsons reference in a while, right? Bush was on The Simpsons, wasn't he? Sure, they've all been on The Simpsons.
Well, he wasn't. His a caricature of him was on The Simpsons. He moved in next to The Simpsons in one episode.
So he,
which was a great episode, by the way.
Oh yeah, absolutely, one of the best. Working his way up, he was the head of the CIA for a while.
Mm-hmm.
But in terms of his presidential record, I mean, lots of the Iraq War One, let's call it the Gulf War, where it was to sort of sweep Saddam Hussein out of Kuwait, and created a massive alliance to do that. Unlike his son, the second Gulf War.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think at the time anyone would have argued that, you know, Kuwait, a sovereign state, needed to be liberated from Saddam. But it was because I remember really well. I was old enough, obviously, to remember this and how it was just went really fast. You know, shock and awe style, which I think sort of set the template for the American wars to come. But the other myth from those days too was the precision war, and that you can remember on CNN or whatever, like the missile smart bomb was just hitting this plant and no civilians were killed, which is absolute nonsense, right? I mean, there was a bit of a channeling of the message, not unlike Willie Horton, I suppose. Messaging became very important, but, you know, was he really, he was a moderate, I don't think he was a liberal, right? But he was at least moderate, like you say, in terms of like, man, we've got these environmental crises and we really need to do something. And then things happened. It's like, like you said, the ozone layer and acid. You can talk about acid rain anymore. I mean, it's still there. Of course, we've got climate change now. But
right. Well, you think about the savings and loan scandal, where you had all these people using savings and loans, which are, you know, small banks, small sort of community-run banks, using these businesses as their own personal money, their own personal piggy banks.
Mm-hmm.
He had to spend billions of dollars to secure the deposits of regular people in much the same way of what happened after the financial collapse of 2008. And he had to raise taxes. The Democrats in Congress, who were in charge of Congress at that time, Congress and the Senate, demanded that there be a tax hike.
Even though he said, read my lips.
No new taxes.
No new taxes. His most famous line, probably.
But of course, that...
Next, I wouldn't do it. Shouldn't it.
1,000 points of light.
Yeah, exactly.
Hands across America. Stay the course.
Right on.
That was a Saturday Night Live bit from with Dana
President
Carvey.
President Dana Carvey.
Yeah. But...
it was quoted at the funeral as well, which was really weird. But
Well, you know what? Dana Carvey was... was one, I think his H.W. Bush was one of the best presidential impressions in that show's history. Light years above, beyond Alec Baldwin's Trump, by the way, which is lame at this point. Where was I going?
We went straight into pop quiz.
The decision to do that, though, knowing that it was going to at least hurt him to break a promise like that.
Big promise
that he repeated several times. There's no political will to do that anymore.
No.
And I think that is very telling.
And I think and that's why he didn't become a two-termer. He probably would have been if the recession...
It's the economy stupid, yeah.
If the recession hadn't happened in the early 90s, and you said about the taxes too, but there was, and in terms of other significant things too, we mentioned the Gulf War I, being involved in the fall of the Berlin Wall and the end of the East Bloc, and working with Gorbachev, who I don't think made the funeral because he's not able, but it was still
he's
commented saying,
years.
He was probably the right person at the right time, because a lot of the leaders back in the day, I'm thinking Mitterrand, Thatcher, and that didn't want a united Germany.
Right.
I mean, there's a whole generation now that doesn't remember this, that Germany was actually split into two, right? It was like there was East and West.
And Angela Merkel was from East Germany.
Ah, yeah, exactly. So
she was at the funeral,
And they stick on the lid and said, no, we're going to have a united Germany. We're going to have this. The dynamic for, the rest of from that point on, Bush was very instrumental in being involved with that. And it's weird to say this, too, but I had almost completely forgotten about the invasion of Panama.
Yeah.
There's a lot of talk about that, too. It's like the to get rid of Noriega.
Basically to serve an arrest warrant on Noriega.
Who was a CIA operative at one point as well. And
the
only thing I remember from that was they were trying to flush him up by playing We're Not Going to Take It or something.
Right. Yeah. Like, Twisted Sister.
Just keep shooting music at him.
I mean, and he also pardoned the people involved with Iran-Contra, selling weapons to the Contras and...
Which he kind of said he didn't really know anything about, too, but he must have been. Was he head of CIA at that point? No, he was
he was vice president. That
Reagan's
happened
vice
when Reagan
from,
was...
He was pretty much in the White House for the entire 80s.
I somehow doubt he knew nothing, but...
Well, you can't be head of CIA and know nothing. You always know something.
But like some of the left-wing, I can't remember if it was Democracy Now! Or The Nation made the point that, that sort of set a tone for that there's no consequences for Republicans breaking the law going forward. I'm not sure about that, but it certainly was not great that he let those people sort of off the hook with a pardon. The Panama invasion. I know people have mixed feelings about Gulf War I.
Nixon got a pardon.
But, at the end of the day, there's an argument to be made that when Gerry Ford pardoned Nixon, there was a healing action in that has since paid off, that people recognize that the pardoning of Nixon was probably the right thing to do, even though it ticked off. Probably alone cost Gerry Ford getting elected in 1976. But the Berlin Wall thing and the end of the Cold War thing, and George H.W. Bush had a lot of advisors who wanted him to take a victory lap, who wanted him to fly to Berlin and basically tap dance on the wall. And he didn't. And that takes a lot of character. That takes a lot of character to say, this is not my moment. This is a moment for the Berlin people and for the German people.
But you think about now, though, if Trump didn't do it, they'd be like, oh, he's just not interested. The times were definitely different.
Right.
And it's weird to talk about this because in remembering all this happened, this is recent history, but yet it's almost, he was a World War II veteran. Very, very young. Was signed up at 18. Suppose he was like the youngest fighter pilot from the States in the American Navy in World War II. And of course, everybody after that, aside from, say, from that period, from, say, Truman and Eisenhower, the most recent presidents have all been pretty much draft dodgers, or at least found a way around it.
Clinton was a draft dodger out and out.
Clinton.
Obama
not quite old
came
enough.
Of age after the draft. W got
to
the front of the line with connections to join the National Guard, so he wouldn't have to go into the main force.
Because the daddies are all millionaires. I think with the exception of probably since Truman, that everybody who gets the presidency comes from money. And, of course, he's on the top of that pile. Donald Trump, the ultimate. I think we've peaked. We've had the billionaire president. Now they got to go back to somebody
unless Bloomberg
from the streets of Brooklyn.
Unless Bloomberg wins.
Bloomberg.
I will say it was heartbreaking at the end of the W eulogy when he just like broke for a minute at the emotion. But we'll digress and leave that there. You can find us on our website, opensourcesguelph.com. We're on Facebook at Open Sources Newswire, on Twitter at OS_Guelph. Find us on our Politicast channel on Podbean and subscribe through iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and Spotify. I am at Twitter at Adam A. Donaldson, or you can go to guelphpolitico.ca.
Scotty Hertz on Facebook, Scotty Hertz on Twitter, and I blog at spannerbook.wordpress.com.
And we have to get out of here because DJ Sounds Good to Me is here at the top of the hour on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. But we will be back next Thursday at 5 p.m. for more Open Sources, and we'll see you then.